On July 24, 1715, in celebration of the marriage of King Philip of Spain, the largest treasure fleet in maritime history set sail from Havana, Cuba. The $500 million worth of gold, silver, and jewels came to be known as the Queen's Dowry. Unfortunately, in his eagerness to consummate the marriage, King Philip ordered the fleet to sail at the worst time of the year. And so the great galleons, heavy with their sparkling cargo, sailed straight into a massive hurricane and were never seen again. A collection of small islands amidst glittering blue sea. Warner Brothers Pictures presents a DeLine Pictures Bernie Goldman production. An Andy Tennant film. Fool's Gold. A large boat bobs on the calm waters. A decrepit motor on the stern vibrates and wobbles, shooting out sparks and smoke. Two thick hoses trail from the back of it into the clear blue waters. Two men with oxygen tanks and face masks use the hoses to hoover up fine, gravelly sand from the seabed. One of the men, Ben Finn Finnegan, is blonde and has a tattoo of a mermaid on his right arm. More smoke belches from the motor. Sparks shower down onto loose scraps of paper on the deck. Lifted by a gentle breeze, a small scrap of white paper floats through the open door of the cabin. Three tiny holes in the paper glow and gradually grow larger. The crumpled scrap hovers briefly by the window, then bursts into flames. It drops onto a bed, landing on a magazine on top of the bedding. The spluttering motor bounces precariously towards the edge of the boat. One of the hoses shoots off and water jets out of the motor. On the seabed, Finn checks the steel nozzle of the hose. A fire rages in the cabin. The flames consume a book, the 1715 Spanish Plate Fleet. A map of the islands has small annotated grids drawn on the sea surrounding the coast. A flaming ball falls from a fishing net on the ceiling and comes to rest against a gas canister, engulfing the cabin in flames. The motor tumbles from the back of the boat and sinks slowly to the sea floor behind the two oblivious divers. They turn to see a cloud of sand rise from the ocean floor, then look at each other and shrug. The boat explodes. A mushroom cloud shoots up from the burning boat. Two Afro-Caribbean guys, Curtis and Cordell, recline in deck chairs on the beach. Curtis hands some binoculars to Cordell, who peers out at the listing boat and smirks. They share a look, then swig their beers. Finn tries to work the nozzle from his hose with a knife. The other diver shouts at him. Finn pulls the skinny co-diver's face mask out on its elastic and lets it snap back, whacking the guy in the face. The capsized boat sinks to the sea floor behind them as they quarrel. A cloud of sand billows up, obscuring it, and they look round. Bits of debris whoosh past them as the cloud encroaches. Finn grabs what looks to be a broken shard of a dinner plate. He turns it in his hands and inspects it, then swims to the surface, followed by his gangly co-diver, Alphonse.
What the hell was that?
What's what?
Refer to the enormous underwater explosion!
Alphonse?
What?
Finn scrapes at the plate with his knife.
Do you have any idea what this is?
I guess it is a piece of a plate from Howard Johnson's.
Do you have any idea what this is, buddy? This is it. This is it, man. This is what I've been looking for 8 years. 8 years. Mwah! Huh? Oh, good God. Oh, thank you. Oh, baby, I need you here. Oh, yes, you are. Where's the boat? Where's the boat?
I don't know.
Would somebody just take it?
Finn looks around the bay. Alphonse puts his face mask back on and looks under the water.
I found it.
What do you mean, where is it?
It will come to you.
Finn checks around, glances up at the sky, then slowly lowers his eyes and looks into the water.
Oh, no.
For some reason, I'm not entirely surprised.
Oh, no.
Finn dives down into the clear blue waters. Bubbles rise from his oxygen mask as he kicks his flippered feet and descends into the cabin of the sunken boat. His eyes widen inside his face mask as he sees the ink run from his map of the ocean floor. He takes a photograph from the notice board. It shows him nuzzling the neck of a beautiful, smiling blonde. A boat looms over him on the surface of the water. He surfaces.
Hey, guys! Get in. I suppose you wonder where the boat went.
It took us a minute to figure it out, too.
You sunk it.
Listen, Curtis, forget the boat. All right, we found something.
Big Bonnie spent some major bank on that leaky-ass piece of shit. How come it sunk?
Look, boats sink. I mean, nobody knows why. Can I show you what I found?
I think it was the compressor.
Don't help me.
I wanted to know it was you who stole that money.
You didn't buy a new compressor?
It's okay if I take off that?
Yeah, man, we don't care about you.
Oh, you disloyal Ukrainian prick.
Finn and Alphonse splash each other. Bearded Cordell fires a warning shot from the boat.
Ho, 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 ho! Easy!
Get in the damn boat!
Aboard a huge, sleek white yacht, the blonde girl from Finn's photo cries black, mascara-tinged tears into a bathroom sink. She grabs a tissue and wipes black spots from the sink. Her plaited blonde hair is tied up and she wears a white uniform with navy blue epaulettes. She brings a tissue to her mouth and stares at herself in the mirror.
Oh. What perfect hair. What a perfect hairstyle. Oh my god, what perfect nails. Where did you get them done? You did them yourself? Oh my god. They're so incredibly perfect. Like your incredibly perfect face and your perfect personality.
She unties and tousles her shoulder-length hair, which falls into a ruffled mess.
That's nice.
Her replaited hair still messy, she enters the plush cabin where a white-haired man is on the phone.
Lillian, I've called Teddy and Purdy, and they're not going to tell their editors not to publish stories about it. It's how they make a living. And anyway, what about the other half dozen bloody magazines? She's always appearing in half clothes and halfway on her way to the bloody halfway house. Crush them too. No, no, no. I assure you that as soon as Gemma arrives, I have every intention of giving her a very firm talking to. And I... Hello? Oh.
Pretty young Gemma adorns magazine covers.
My ex-wife.
Yes, sir.
The blonde, Tess, has delivered food to a table. She loiters.
Was there something else?
Tess.
I'm sorry, Tess.
No, sir. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you accommodating me.
How did I do that?
You know, by agreeing to stop in Key West for my thing tomorrow.
Your thing? Oh, yes, I remember. Married, are you getting?
Oh, no. Divorced.
Oh. Your idea?
Yeah.
I don't mean to pry.
That's all right. I'll tell you all about it sometime.
If you like.
The man, Nigel Honeycutt, looks away.
Anyway, thanks again.
Mustachioed Nigel looks at her. Bare-chested, Finn stands in a bar before a seated man in dark glasses. Gold discs hang on the wall.
Authorized $62,581.43 to fix that boat.
The man, Big Bunny, strokes a black and white rabbit in his lap.
So where my money at?
Oh, God, I don't know. It's all over.
All over where?
The world?
All over the world.
The Caribbean, mainly. I mean, hell, I was pretty much blown out at just about every dive supplier south of Key West.
I don't believe this guy.
Look, I used the money to pay off some old debt, which, if anything, should reassure you. Because now I owe you money, and you know that I'm good for it.
Other Afro-Caribbean guys watch with bated breath.
Can we talk about the plague?
Bunny turns to a leggy brunette nearby. He hands the large rabbit to her, then takes off his shades and picks up the big triangular shard of plate. He inspects it, then glares at Finn.
This looks like a plate from Howard Johnson's.
It is not a plate from Howard Johnson's, man. That's got half the Vanger family crest stamped on the back of it. And if you just let me get back down to my boat, all right, before my books rot, I'll prove it.
Shit look more to me like half an Arby's logo or something.
Curtis laughs.
Look at the fillies galloping on the rim.
Finn points at the plate.
Do you understand what this means?
Reclining in a suede armchair, Big Bunny looks up from the plate.
Get his embezzling ass off mine.
Big Bunny puts it down. Curtis and Cordell sidle up behind Finn.
Fine. I have my shard back.
You ain't gonna need it.
Finn narrows his eyes.
So you do know what it means.
Curtis pistol whips Finn onto Big Bunny. Finn's held at gunpoint on the deck of a boat.
You guys are making a big mistake. Big Bunny is never gonna find the Aurelia without me.
To Cordell, who shackles Finn's feet.
You ever hear the expression, miss by an inch, miss by a mile?
Cordell stands.
It's a diving expression. It means you miss by an inch, you miss by a mile. Now, that wreck could be scattered over 20 miles, guys.
Any last words?
Cordell nods at Curtis, who peers along the barrel of his pistol. Windswept, Finn looks pensive.
Yeah.
He looks away in thought, then stares at Cordell.
Tell Tess I love her.
Okay.
They exchange a look.
Who's Tess?
It's my wife. At least she will be till 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
He looks at Curtis.
She's divorcing me.
He lowers his gun.
I still don't know what I did wrong.
Curtis sticks the gun into the top of his shorts.
Well, brother, you ain't never gonna find out neither.
Let's go.
They grab Finn, but he struggles, kicking Cordell across the deck and punching Curtis in the jaw. Finn hits Cordell with a box of fish, which falls into the sea. Curtis grabs Finn from behind, and Cordell lifts Finn's shackled feet. Finn swipes the pistol as he tumbles down onto a ledge at the back of the boat. Cordell throws the anchor overboard, dragging the shackled Finn into the water. Finn clings to the boat. Cordell goes to stamp on him, but Finn shoots a hole through his foot. Finn shoots Curtis in the ear. He writhes around in agony. Cordell clutches his foot. Finn rests the gun on the ledge as he struggles with the anchor.
Kill him! Use the boat! Start the engine!
Curtis scurries up a ladder and starts the boat. Gripping the pistol between his teeth, Finn hangs on for dear life as the boat surges forward through the water. The gun slips from his mouth and he loses his grip on the boat. The anchor hits the seafloor. Finn sinks down beside it. He wrestles with the chains around his ankles. He looks around. Something gleams on the golden seabed. He squints at it, then drags himself towards the anchor with the chain. Holding the anchor in both hands, he makes incremental leaps, pogoing towards the shiny object. It's the gun. He snatches it from the seabed and points it at the padlocked chains between his ankles. He closes his eyes and mumbles. The shot cuts through the lock and he pulls himself loose. He surfaces, flailing his arms. He splutters and spots something on the rippling surface of the ocean. He heads for the floating fish box. The distant motorboat hares off, the sea foaming in its wake. Sunset.
Hey, guys.
Tess.
Wish me luck.
Good luck, honey. Don't lose your nerve at the last minute.
You don't need her nerve, tender when the guy don't even show up.
Chefs, Gary and Eddie.
Why do you say that?
Because that's his nature.
What the hell do you know about his nature?
Oh, that's right. Defend that inconsiderate bastard and attack your friends who love you. Go ahead. I got no feelings.
No, I'm just saying you don't know anything about my marriage.
Well, I heard enough.
Do I comment on your love life?
You could. If I didn't happen to be the most fortunate guy in the world.
Get out of here.
I just want you to have the same kind of happiness me and Eddie thank God for every day of our lives.
He's not exaggerating either. We really do that.
Apparently, this makes me some kind of hideous, deranged animal.
You just make it sound like I never meant anything to him.
All I said was the guy has a tendency to miss a lot of appointments.
Still out at sea, Finn clings to the floating white fish box. Bright sunlight glitters on the gentle waves. His head is hung and his eyes closed. A long speedboat cuts across the horizon behind him. Finn's eyes open and his jaw gapes. He lifts his head and looks around. Parched and weary, he clings to the floating box. Gentle waves splash at his lithe, sun-bronzed body. He hangs his head again. A breeze ruffles his sandy blonde hair. The speedboat grows nearer. Finn hears the music coming from the approaching boat and lifts his head. He waves and the boat stops. On board are two 20-something couples in swimming shorts and bikinis. One of the guys videos on a camcorder.
Behold this dude!
What's up?
Oh my god, are you from Cuba?
Lucky for you, we happen along, my most superfluously toasted friend. It appears that you have run dry of the sacred nectar.
The guy throws Finn a can of beer.
All hail Neptune and the ocean party on its mighty way!
The girls flash their boobs. Finn grins.
He's in rescue.
Finn sits aboard the speeding boat. He pulls on a bright tie-dyed t-shirt as they pull into the harbour past Nigel's magnificent white yacht. They power past the sleek white twin-deck yacht and carve into the harbour. One of the pretty co-ed girls dances. Finn gets up.
Take a left, right here!
The guy at the wheel turns the boat, throwing Finn and the others into the sea. A portly judge.
I'll give him a few more minutes, Mr. McKintry. But if he's not here by 15:15, I'll be forced to award everything to Mrs. Finnegan here by default.
I'm gonna kill him. Wanna go to prison? If he gets me out of Florida.
Honey, Florida didn't ruin your life. You did. You married a guy for the sex and expected him to be smart.
Finn clambers up a ladder onto a jetty and looks at his watch.
No!
Maybe he had car trouble.
Car trouble?
Yeah. You know. Car trouble.
He'd have to own a car. Which he couldn't even if he wanted to because he has no money. He has no credit. He has no clue how to behave like a responsible adult. Which is why I can't get a loan, because everything is in our name.
Tess grins broadly.
I can't even pay for school and finish my degree, which is what I was doing in the first place before I got dragged down here on spring break.
She throws back her golden hair.
But like you said, the sex was really, really, really great.
Her eyes are closed.
Do you have any idea how humiliating it is to get divorced by yourself?
Finn bursts through the door behind them. He raises a finger, then bends over to catch his breath. Tess shakes her head. Finn stands up straight.
Your Honor, this is a big mistake. This woman and I still love each other. Don't do this, Tess. Look, I know I messed up. All right, but I'm willing to change in any area that you feel needs work. I want to make you happy. I'll do anything. I'll see a counselor.
Finn stares at her imploringly. She looks him in the eye.
Will you come to Chicago with me like you promised?
Slack-jawed, Finn blinks.
Well, could be. I mean, that could work. I'll definitely see the counselor.
Tess throws down her handbag. Her attorney steps forward.
Mr. Finnegan, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to inform you that under Florida law, you and this woman have been divorced the last 50 or 60 seconds. Moreover, as you were not present at the time of the proceedings, she got everything.
Tess takes a deep breath and looks at Finn. He reels and turns to the bespectacled, white-haired judge.
We're divorced.
I'm afraid so.
Finn turns to Tess, his shoulders sink and his eyes widen. Tess's attorney studies her with a tight smile as she gazes sadly at Finn.
Why?
Tess relaxes her furrowed brow, bites her lip and raises a finger.
Excuse me.
Finn's eyes follow her as she walks briskly from the room. Something dawns on Finn and he starts after her.
Oh wait, Tess! I gotta tell you what happened! Tess?
Outside.
We found her. Me and Alphonse. About 100 yards off the reef. Right where we always said she'd be.
Finn leans forward with a hopeful smile.
Proven.
Finn considers. He checks his pockets, then turns to a passing brunette.
Excuse me, do you have a pen, paper?
Anybody got a pen? Pencil, paper, anything?
Your uselessness is epic.
What does that mean?
Tess hands Finn a pen and pad.
Alphonse and I are diving. I come across this plate. Dinner plate. Yay big. It's plain white. This.
He draws.
Stamped on the back. In blue. It's the Vanger family crest, Tess. You were right all along. You were right before anybody.
Her brow creases.
Where did you find this?
100 yards off the reef.
He beams. Tess glances down at his drawing.
Wow, Finn, oh my God.
That's what I'm saying.
Where's the plate?
Well, I don't have it on me this minute.
Where do you have it?
Well, it's back there.
He points. She smiles knowingly.
Wow.
She descends some steps.
Wow.
I know what you're thinking, Tess, but I swear to God it's the truth. You can ask Alphonse.
Okay, where is he?
Well, he's back there, too.
I can't believe you would dangle this in front of me. I can't believe it.
You really think I'd lie about this?
Why not? You're a liar.
I mean, this is such an inappropriate time to dwell on that.
I can draw this picture,
hey,
too.
Tess, I'm telling you, we solved a 300-year-old mystery yesterday. All right? Married or not, if we don't go after that ship, it's going to haunt us the rest of our lives, and you know it.
I wasted 8 years of my life on this bullshit. I'm going back to Chicago. I'm going to get my PhD, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life teaching, reading, and writing books. And somewhere in there, I'm going to meet myself, an intelligent, successful man who can get through an entire conversation without using the word definitely.
Finn looks indignant.
First of all, I hardly ever say that anymore. And when are you going to stop selling this crap about going back to school? You want history? It's under the ocean, lady.
Finn struts towards her.
Will you tell me you want to spend your life in some dark room? Taking notes and writing books about what some grizzled old putz in another dark room cooked up in his head about things that you have actually seen and touched and pulled out of the sand with your own hands?
Tess meets Finn's gaze.
Bullshit.
He glares at her. She calmly bats her eyelids.
I'm so glad we're not married anymore.
Finn juts out his chin. His eyes roam in thought as he leans closer.
Where are you going to get the tuition money? Anyway.
That's the best part. By selling the boat. By selling my boat, which belongs to me, which used to belong to us, but you missed the divorce, so now it belongs to me. I'm going to fix it up, I'm going to sell it, and I'm going to say, what?
This is hard to say.
What is?
He puts his thumb and index finger together and stares at her, tight-lipped. He whispers something in her ear, then takes a step back, points down and shrugs. Tess walks off past two old men seated on a park bench.
But you act like this is totally my fault.
To one of the old men.
Can I borrow this thing
for a second? Well, come on, Tess, you're not going to hit me.
Tess knocks Finn out with the old man's walking stick, then hands it back to him. She strides off, leaving Finn on his back in a flower bed. Tess sits on a boat in the sun. Later, Tess examines an old portrait painting on her laptop. She compares the crest Finn doodled in her notepad to one in the top left-hand corner of the painting. They bear a striking resemblance. She spots a white plate in the background of the portrait and looks at her pad, where Finn has doodled an almost identical design.
Oh my God.
She stares at the image on her laptop.
Oh my God. Oh God.
Finn stands outside a bar in the shade. He unfolds the photo of himself and Tess that he salvaged from the sunken boat, then enters the bar.
I hope this our love will last forever.
Bruised and battered, he slowly hobbles in and carefully lowers himself onto a stool beside a glum-looking Alphonse. Alphonse stares impassively as Finn leans back in his seat.
I take it they didn't kill you.
Finn turns his head and shoots Alphonse a hard stare.
No. Thanks for your help.
You need help.
You are not my mother.
No, you're right. I guess maybe I act like your mother sometimes because I never had one.
Easy, Gary, easy.
Okay, look, the main thing is we get away from Key West. The second Finn lays eyes on this boat, he's gonna be on board in 10 minutes, trust me.
What do you mean? You told him you're working here?
Oh, you're kidding.
Then I don't get it.
He needs money, Gary. Another boat, new equipment, everything. I seriously doubt he's gonna squeeze another dime out of that Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny?
You know the rapper guy with the fight about?
You mean Big Bunny Deans?
Yeah.
Big Bunny Deans is Finn's investor?
Yeah.
Hey, Gary?
He is a very dangerous guy. Although I did like that one song he had, Call Me Thumper. That was some funny shit.
Anyway...
There's something wrong with my bisque. I'm sorry, honey.
That's all right. Anyway...
Yeah, but I don't get it. Because has Finn ever even met Nigel?
No, but he will. Don't you understand? He is a genius at exactly three things. Treasure salving, finding money for treasure salving, and one other thing.
Tess holds out three fingers.
What other thing?
I don't want to talk about it.
How are you planning to get another boat?
I can't think about this right now, Forrest. I just got divorced.
May I make a suggestion?
No.
You see that big yacht lying offshore?
No, which one?
The owner is Nigel Honeycutt.
So what?
I only mention that because he is worth $700 million.
Aboard Nigel's yacht.
And just to let you know, I'm back on board. Obviously. So whenever you want to weigh anchor, it's great.
Thank you.
Should I tell the captain? Ready to weigh anchor? Ready to push off?
Actually, no. My daughter, Gemma, is joining us today, and I said I would wait here for her.
Oh, great. God. When is she coming? Where is she coming from? How far away is she? How great.
I sent the chopper to Miami, but she could be anywhere.
So funny that you would wait in Key West for her when she's coming by chopper.
Is it?
Well, just because the helicopter could just, you know, meet the boat anywhere. I mean, anywhere at all. That's what's so incredibly great about helicopters.
She wants to do some shopping.
Nigel nods to himself. Tess grits her teeth and turns to descend a flight of steps. Nigel looks at her.
What do you do, Tess?
She turns to face him.
I'm the new steward.
But what do you really do?
What makes you think I do anything besides stewarding?
My infallible lifelong instinct for sizing people up.
Have you sized me up?
Quite. You don't mind the work, but you're not here for long. You have a deep but not entirely unclouded love for the sea. You perform your duties with superlative efficiency and ease, suggestive of someone expending approximately 1/10 of her available brain power. So, what do you do with the remaining 90% when you're not getting divorced?
Tess sighs sadly and looks at him.
I hope I'm not being too personal.
She looks up and shakes her head.
No. Not at all.
White-haired, grandfatherly Nigel looks at her softly.
It's just been a crazy couple of years.
She smiles. In the bar, Alphonse furrows his brow.
It's probably his helicopter. His dad was supposed to be arriving today. The whole town is buzzing with excitement.
Finn looks up as he swigs his beer. He strolls out into the daylight, his eyes trained on the helicopter as it flies over the bar. He takes another swig and watches the chopper pass over. Big Bunny approaches the corner of Water Street and Water Avenue with a bandaged Curtis and a limping Cordell.
Hey, so where you say this museum is at?
Curtis checks a handheld device.
Number 2 Water Street.
Okay, every street on this island is called Water Street.
place has a magic atmosphere.
You just find a damn address, man?
Yo, Cordell, we got MapQuest on these things?
Oblivious to them, Finn walks past unnoticed, his eyes still fixed on the helicopter. Aboard his yacht, Nigel waves to the chopper and lowers his eyes resignedly. Finn walks down onto the wooden jetty and watches the helicopter as it approaches Nigel's yacht. Gemma smiles and waves at Nigel from the cockpit as the pilot brings the chopper down on the deck of the yacht. Finn steps down into a small motorized dinghy and starts the engine. The helicopter flies off as Gemma joins Nigel on deck.
Hello, darling.
He gives pretty, dark-haired Gemma a hug.
Hello, my baby.
Daddy!
She squeezes him tightly and he looks uncomfortable. She pulls away and grins at him.
Pleasant flight?
Uh-huh.
She nods.
So, is this the whole boat?
She smiles vacantly.
Yes.
Oh, so cute. I can't believe we're at sea.
Well, technically, we're at anchor.
Oh, wait. Okay, so that just means that the anchor is in the water, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I totally want to learn all the sea terms.
So you shall, my darling.
Okay, let me try again. Excuse me, Nigel?
Yes, my dear.
You know what? Let's not do the accent thing.
It's not good?
Tess smiles awkwardly.
It's fine. Anyway, Nigel, remember when you asked me this afternoon what I really did?
Finn sits at the back of the dinghy, casually steering it towards Nigel's yacht. He reaches inside a cool box and takes out a sandwich, which he sniffs, then munches on. Nigel looks down as men in black t-shirts help Gemma into a speedboat.
Have fun shopping.
Thank you, Daddy.
Do try to keep it under 50,000. Supper's at 7.
Oh, you know, I was supposed to meet some friends in Key Biscayne, but I'm going to try to get out of it.
And invite them aboard if you like. Just let me know.
Okay, I will. Love you.
The speedboat jets off. Gemma removes a pair of sunglasses, then rolls her eyes and lets out a sigh. She takes out a high-tech mobile phone and types a text message. Help! Exclamation mark. 2 whole weeks alone with my dad. Kill me now! Exclamation mark. Her sun hat flies off in the wind. Finn spots the commotion and discards a half-eaten banana. The hat soars like a UFO over the blue ocean. He gives chase.
Hey, look! The hut! Here's a biscuit!
Can you turn the boat around, thank
you? Okay, but we never gonna catch him!
The swarthy, dark-haired driver pulls the boat into a sharp turn, throwing Gemma to one side. She pulls herself upright. Finn motors after the hovering hat. He leaps gracefully from the speeding dinghy and catches the hat in mid-air like a frisbee. He lands back in the dinghy. Gemma gapes. Finn punches the air victoriously. The motorboat carves an arc in the water. It heads straight for Finn.
Oh, shit.
It runs over the dinghy. Members of the crew carry Finn aboard the yacht and lay him on his back. Followed by Nigel, a woman rushes over with a first aid kit.
What in God's name happened?
Oh, Daddy, this man saved my life.
Sir, I really don't think you should get up until I make sure...
Finn raises a hand to quiet the first aider. He looks up at Gemma, who beams excitedly. The first aider stares incredulously as Finn leans forward, propped on one elbow.
Is this your hat?
Yes.
She takes it.
That was the bravest thing I've ever seen in my life.
He collapses.
Sir, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you indeed.
You'll be okay. Just a little bump on the head. Just try not to move around too much for the next few hours.
But I gotta go back to town.
Oh, I really don't advise it.
Well, now what am I gonna do?
May I suggest a hot shower, some clean clothes and cocktails at 6:30?
Okay. Thanks.
Take him to the St. Regis.
The crew help Finn to his feet.
Yep, I'm good.
He follows Gemma.
And
Mr. Honeycutt. Miss Honeycutt, Sharif, him on the boat.
Gemma, your lifeline to civilization, darling.
Nigel glances down at the disparaging message on her mobile phone.
Oh my God, I would have been so dead.
Yeah, darling.
Slighted, he walks away. She looks at the phone and frowns. At the Mofitch Maritime Museum.
Well, Mr. Dees, I'm always delighted to welcome an entrant into my field, whether it be on land or sea. But I feel I need to warn you. There's no way of getting away from treasure once it's fastened itself on your mind.
I want you to find me the Queen's diary.
Well, now, Bunny,
Big Bunny. It's one word.
The corners of Moe's mouth are downturned.
Well, that's an emerald of a different color, isn't it?
Cordell.
Stocky, weather-beaten Moe sits opposite Big Bunny. Cordell hands Bunny the shard, which he removes from a black bag.
This is, this piece of the plate that we found in the Bahamas off a Top Sail Key. Now, if you turn it over, you may notice that it has the Vanger family crest stamped on it. That's that. That's what that is right there.
Moe looks at it.
That's very nice, sir. But who the hell are the Vangers, and why the hell should I give a rat's ass about their family crest?
Evening. Tess carries three plates of food on a silver tray.
It's not an investment, per se, because you probably won't see a dime. But it's a chance to pull out a piece of living history from the sand with your own two hands.
Finn sits at a dinner table with Nigel and Gemma.
To the Aurelia!
Hey, babe! What are you doing here?
Have a good dinner!
She throws their plates down. She stomps off. Finn smiles broadly at Nigel.
I take it you've met.
So, Tess and I first hooked up when we worked for this cat named Moe Fitch. He's kind of a local character, you know, big talker, a lot of tall tales, a lovable old sea dog.
You should live to be so eccentric.
Ooh.
She serves sweets.
Thank you, babe.
I do wish you would sit down.
Moe Fitch is the most respected and successful treasure solver in the world.
Nobody said he wasn't.
When Finn met Moe, he was repairing outboards and lawnmowers during the brief intervals he wasn't getting fired for surfing.
Two times, Tess. I got fired two times.
I'll be off in 1 second.
Moe picked him out of a puddle of motor oil and suntan lotion, gave him a job, a vocation, taught him everything he knows.
Finn raises his eyebrows.
Almost. Anyway... Then they had a tremendous falling out over this cannon we found.
On our day off?
From the Aurelia, 3 miles east of Vero Beach, which the court ruled was Moe's because we borrowed his equipment.
The sea is all attached, right?
To what, darling?
Well, Carrie and Vivante just grabbed a plane for the Yucatan, and I thought maybe we could hook up with them instead of just sailing around doing nothing.
Tess shifts in her seat.
Tell us about the treasure.
Finn puts down his drink and clears his throat. He wears a pale blue shirt and white slacks.
July 31st, 1715. A hurricane sinks the entire Spanish treasure fleet off the coast of Florida, including her flagship, the Capitana, which, according to its manifest, carried the Queen's dowry. 40 chests of jewelry and gold crowns, especially crafted in the Orient for the new Queen of Spain.
When we say jewels, we mean Indian diamonds. Burmese rubies and Colombian emeralds, the size of your fist.
Anyway, we should probably start with what Tess and I got so excited about on our honeymoon.
I think we can all guess.
Gemma pouts.
After we lost the court case, we decided to go backpacking in Spain for 2 weeks. Ended up spending 2 years in the archives of the Indies in Seville.
You spent your honeymoon in a library?
Obscured by a book on a wooden stand in the archives.
Oh, baby, I love you too.
Where every known record, official transcript, and royal decree relating to the treasure fleets has been kept for centuries.
At first it was just for fun, but then we decided to look up the Aurelia because of the cannon we'd found in Florida. And it sort of became our pet project, especially when we learned the captain was an 18-year-old kid named Sebastian Vangor.
Who we also discovered was the illegitimate son of Captain General Don Juan Ubilla of the Capitana and his Mexican mistress, Francesca Vangor. We thought it was an interesting sidebar and really didn't think much more of it until Tess found this very obscure Spanish book published in 1905 titled The Vangers an 18th century family.
It was a collection of letters, actually.
So why is this important? Because the Vangers controlled the mule train that transported the dowry over the mountains from the Pacific to the Caribbean and then loaded it onto Spanish galleons here in Veracruz.
So I'm reading this, and all of a sudden I start hyperventilating because there it is right in front of me in Ubia's last letter to Francesca. He wrote, "My faith in the Aurelia is that she is swift and light and can outrun the storms we will most certainly encounter. But it is my faith in Sebastian that knows no bounds. Our son is good and strong and wiser than this old fool who leaves your bed more and more reluctantly. The glory of the Spanish crown rests in his capable hands."
So Ubia pulled a switch
with the Vanguard's help
and moved the queen's dowry from the Capitana to the supply ship.
Because
the Capitana was already way overloaded with treasure, so it was very heavy and very slow. You see, it wasn't just hurricanes they had to worry about. It was British warships, French privateers, you name it.
About the time Finn and I are ready to leave, we found this article about a Spanish sailor who was rescued off a deserted island after being shipwrecked for 3 years.
Off Topsail Key.
Right. 1718.
3 years after the hurricane.
A Dutch frigate had come to grief on the shoals off of Topsail Key, and while waiting for the tide to rise, they saw what they thought was an old man paddling out on a log.
Only he wasn't an old man. He was 21 years old. Looked like Tom Hanks in that movie.
Castaway.
Yes.
He told the Dutch captain his name was Rafael Serrano of the tobacco ship Francesca.
As in mother of Sebastian.
Yes. Exactly. Now, he said he had struck the same reef and sunk in just 30 feet of water.
Wow. You guys must really like treasure.
Yes. It's very impressive. But it's still thin.
Oh, my God.
Only Francesca? She didn't sink off Topsail Key. She sank off the coast of Veracruz in 1708 with all hands, including her captain, Rafael Serrano.
Wait, I don't get it.
Neither did we. Until we discovered the Francesca had been owned by the Vangor family.
Yeah. So, what do we know about Sebastian Vangor? Well, we know for a fact that he survived a hurricane, a shipwreck, starvation, pirates most likely, and then he lied about it. Now, why lie about being part of the greatest treasure fleet in history? Unless you're sitting on top of a huge secret. A secret that nobody, not even the King of Spain, knew existed.
Finn smiles.
Well, I can think of only one reason. Honor. Because his father had entrusted him with the most precious gifts mankind had never seen. He had to survive, to fulfill the privilege Ubia had bestowed on him that fateful day in Veracruz. That's why he lied.
He glances at Gemma, then points at Nigel.
That's why he lived. And that's why we can't give up.
He looks at Tess, and she looks down with an air of sadness.
Sebastian Vangor is the unsung hero of an entire nation, and we intend to prove it.
So, what happened to him?
Sebastian?
He was taken off the Dutch ship in Martinique and died a week later of consumption.
Oh, he drank too much?
No, consumption, darling, as in tuberculosis, not to be confused with consuming, as in guzzling.
Oh, man. I'm so dumb.
Oh, you know you're dumb? I used to think that it meant he died having sex, as in consummating.
You did?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
Hmm?
Nigel looks nonplussed. Gemma beams.
Anyway, that's our idea. It's Tessa's mostly. She was always the brains of the operation.
Tess shrugs coyly.
Well, Gemma, what do you think?
You're asking me?
I am. A treasure hunt in the Bahamas? Or a month with Kerry and Vervanti in the Yucatan?
Gemma glances down, then lifts her gaze to look at Finn, who smiles. She leans forward seductively.
Will you teach me how to dive?
Yes, I will.
You can get it if you really want.
Alphonse boards the yacht. Tess introduces him to Nigel and Gemma, who wears a skimpy bikini. They all stare down as a lid is lifted on a storage compartment at the prow of the boat. Inside are two blue and white jet skis and scuba gear. Finn and Alphonse strap an oxygen tank to Gemma's back. Nigel sits in a plunge pool wearing a wetsuit. Tess adjusts his diving gear. Finn steps away from Gemma and the heavy oxygen tank pulls her off balance. He helps steady her and shares a look with Tess, who furrows her brow. Nigel's legs flail in the air as he submerges himself in the shallow pool. He topples over onto his back and air bubbles from a tube on his tank. His white hair sticks to his face. Tess helps him up. Sunlight plays on the calm blue waters as the yacht ploughs its way towards land. Gemma's on her high-tech phone.
Now, the island's basically triangular. You've got cliffs and breakers, harbour and town and beach. I found the plate near the reef just on the other side.
But you haven't got the exact coordinates?
The exact position of the find is irrelevant.
Why?
We kind of left a marker.
We set the boat on fire and then we sank it.
But we would never do that to your boat.
No, just my boat.
Our boat.
My boat.
Our boat.
My boat.
Hey, did you know that this entire island is owned by Big Funny Dean?
Who?
He owns the whole island. Big Funny Dean.
Oh, yes, I remember. Didn't he murder someone named Buzzy Dice or Pogo Stick or something?
His name was Ecstasy. You're really close. And he was totally acquitted.
Well, it was difficult to secure a conviction because he murdered all the witnesses.
You are really incredible, Finn.
Okay, so he owns the island. So what? He doesn't own the water.
And how's he gonna feel when we're hauling treasure up out of the water in front of his beach house?
Supportive?
I told you not to get involved with him. What if we need food or fuel or flashlight batteries?
Will you relax, Tess?
He steps closer.
It's Aurelia.
He gazes into her eyes.
She's right around the corner, and she's all ours.
Tess looks away thoughtfully. She takes a breath and looks Finn in the eyes. He beams reassuringly, and she cracks a smile. Gemma descends steps to their level.
Hey, guys! Come look at this boat! It's got these really big, tubes going in the water off the back!
She sprints up the stairs. The name of Nigel's yacht, Precious Gem, is printed on its side. They look ahead at a smaller vessel anchored nearby.
Is that where you found the plate?
Tanned and petite, Gemma smiles excitedly as Finn and Tess push past her. Mo stares at the precious gem from the deck of his modest boat.
Man, oh man. Anybody but me want to spend a weekend in Paris with that boat?
I think she's already taken.
What?
The man, Jim, hands Mo a pair of binoculars. Finn has binoculars too. The two men stare at each other.
Oh, you son of a bitch!
Mo.
What?
What is it?
Finn runs towards the prow. Tess peers through the binoculars.
What's happened?
I'm pretty sure Hal just froze over.
Well, don't take your speedo! Your alien's mine, goddammit! Not if I find a first!
Finn scampers back to the others.
Looks like he's only been here a day or two.
How can you tell?
Full day's work to lay the grid.
So, what are they looking for?
Do you really not know the answer to that?
Gemma's mouth hangs open. Tess stands with her hands on her hips and her eyebrows raised.
Dying, is it?
Gemma gawps, throws her hands in the air, and stomps off past Alphonse.
I will go comfort her.
No, you stay there. Nigel, I'm so sorry, but she's got to learn that there's better ways to get attention than acting like a bimbo.
Like what?
Nigel gives him a look. The precious gem nears Mo's boat. Bare-chested, Finn lets air out of a valve on his diving tank and hurriedly slings it into the water. He grabs his flippers and dives in. The precious gem's propellers stop turning. Finn's sunken boat, the Booty Calls, lies on the ocean bed between the two vessels. Nigel looks at Mo.
Ahoy there! Good morning!
Morning to you. Quite a bucket you got there.
Hello, Mo.
Mo nods.
Hey, darling.
Small world, huh?
Where's that good-for-nothing husband of yours?
Ex-husband.
Congratulations.
Wearing the flippers, the oxygen tank, and a face mask, Finn swims to the sunken boat and peers over it. Two divers are erecting a shallow, iron-framed grid on the ocean floor. They sign okay to each other and rise towards the surface.
Find anything yet, Mr. Finch?
Well, sir, I was just going to set off some charges and take a look. You might want to ease back a ways just in case we accidentally scratch your finish.
I'll tell the captain.
Let's blow some holes!
Moe's crew clap their hands.
Come on, I'm getting old. Let's find some gold.
Stocky, grizzled Moe wears a dark vest, sunglasses and a baseball cap. Still submerged, Finn dismantles the iron grid. Gazing down into the water, Tess spots him.
Oh, my God.
What?
Delay.
Excuse me, Moe.
Well. If it isn't a Ukrainian sidekick...
I don't think of myself that way. I am the lead character in my own story.
But why does everyone I know think I'm hot, except the ones on this boat?
We think you're hot.
Are you kidding me?
I know I do.
Gemma, I need your help. No time to explain.
What do you want? Some expert advice on how to be stupid?
Oh. Look, see how dumb they are?
Gemma turns to the crew.
Yeah?
They can't help it. You can. The end. Let's go.
Finn hurries to dismantle the grid. Tess leads Gemma onto the deck of the yacht and removes Gemma's white cap.
Okay, you're on. Go.
Gemma scampers into full view of Moe's crew and poses.
Hi! I'm Gemma! Hi!
She waves.
Hey!
They down tools and gawp at her.
It's Gemma Honeycutt!
It's Gemma Honeycutt!
Hi! What are your names?
I'm Happy.
Oh.
I'm Jim.
Hi.
Petruccio, eh?
So, did you all grow up on this boat? Oh my God, there's Finn!
Gemma!
Moe and his crew stare down at Finn.
I'll get that little shit out of there myself!
A charge is detonated, hurling Finn into the iron grid.
What are you, crazy Moe?
Finn catches an antique sword.
Who the hell set off that charge? There's a man down there!
Was it right over here?
He ripped up the grid. Nobody rips up the grid.
Anybody gonna kill that boy, it's gonna be me.
Okay.
A crew member accidentally sets off another charge. Finn flies up out of the water in a torrent of white seafoam. The antique sword soars through the air. Gemma falls on her backside and the sword plunges like a spear into the deck of the yacht between her spread-eagled legs. Finn comes down with a thump.
Finn!
He lies flat on his back on a canopy over the deck of Moe's boat. He lowers himself gymnastically onto the deck and stands facing Moe.
Oh, hello, Moe. Hello, Finn. Anything broke?
I don't think so.
Good.
Moe punches Finn. Punch drunk, Finn sways.
Is that all you got, old man?
Then collapses.
It's difficult to maintain enthusiasm for your leadership when you kept getting beat up by that old man.
He's 56 years old. I can't hit him.
That's quite obvious.
Alphonse glances up at a plane. Finn carefully cleans the sword in a tank of water.
Is that a yellow and white Cessna 206 seaplane? I would describe it more as banana and cream.
I still can't get over the way he just came up out of the water like that.
I know, and holding the sword.
And then he just makes this totally perfect toss, and the sword ends up sticking
right
straight
in
up in the deck.
Amazing!
But it's more than just the sheer power of his raw sexuality. It's the totality of his emotional commitment to the task at hand.
Yeah, it's the focus. It's the focus.
He sees it. He wants it. He goes after it. He gets it.
He sure got me.
Do you mind?
They stop cooking.
I'm sorry.
We're sorry.
Seated at a round table.
Well, here's to a wonderfully exciting first day. And to the safe landing of our glorious leader.
Yes, I. Here, Nigel. You the man.
Finn sips wine.
No, he meant you, stupid.
What?
No, Finn, honey, Finn.
There's port in the salon, if anyone's interested. And a wonderful selection of cigars, if anyone feels like ruining the evening for the rest of us.
and cupcakes.
Are there any prostitutes?
Nigel's face sours.
Sorry. No.
Well, maybe we can call some.
My God, are you serious?
Pay him no attention, Jimmy. He's a provocateur.
Okay, but we're not in France right now. We're in America.
Tess shrugs, then rises from her seat, as Finn does the same.
That's it for me tonight, eh?
Alphonse looks up at them.
That was a coincidence that we got up together and we're both going to bed because we're not going to bed together. Honestly.
No.
Well, it's really none of our business.
Oh, even interesting.
What she's trying to say is good night.
Good night.
Alphonse leaves the table.
Good night. Nigel, have a great day. Emma, sweet dreams.
Finn kisses Gemma on the forehead and leaves. Nigel smiles at Tess, who wears a pleated dress.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Tess.
Gemma watches Finn go. Nigel has his arms folded.
I hope, Gemma, it hasn't been too dull for you here.
Of course not, Daddy. It's been really fun.
Gemma's doe-eyed. Nigel looks away awkwardly.
Do you still play gin rummy?
Oh, my God, all the time, whenever I fly.
Penny a point.
Bare-chested and wearing Bermuda shorts, Finn stares at a framed map on his cabin wall, then flops back onto the bed and lies down. Tess lies in her bottom bunk staring up. She sighs and rubs her neck. She knocks on the door of Finn's darkened cabin. She opens it.
Don't get the wrong idea. I just want to talk.
She stands in the doorway.
I just thought, since I've been kind of critical recently, maybe I should tell you how magnificent you were today. You know, taking out their grid and you couldn't hit Mo back. It just reminded me of how...
She looks at Finn's bed.
Are you in here?
It's empty. She turns the lights on and squints at the crumpled bed linen. She smiles thinly to herself. She stands in the moonlight looking at the empty tank of water where the antique sword was. Gemma lays her cards on the table.
Jen.
What?
She grabs a calculator. Nigel looks down at his cards.
105.
28.
Dollars?
Well, it's all going to charity, Daddy.
Nigel grins.
Well, darling, I'm very pleased you've inherited not only your mother's beauty and naive charm, but also her singular talent for getting huge sums of money out of me with a modicum of effort.
He writes a check and holds it out to her. Her smile fades.
What's wrong?
She looks hurt.
I don't want it.
I'm sorry. It was a joke.
She glares at him and he sighs.
And to be honest, she didn't exactly marry me for love, did she?
Gemma bristles. She stands up.
My mother was a 24-year-old blackjack dealer from Nebraska. You had to tip her $500 just to have a drink with you. You get married 2 weeks later at the age of 175.
51,
and now you're mad
precise,
because she had the brains to get some money out of it before you dumped her?
No, I'm mad about the amount.
Oh, well, okay, you can have mine. Because I'm cutting myself off. I don't want anything from you anymore. Except for food. And clothes. And rent. And, like, travel. And... I'm totally serious.
Yes, that's what is so frightening about it.
Her jaw drops and she stomps off.
Gemma!
Indignant, she turns to face him. He smiles softly.
For what it's worth, I loved your mother. And I love you.
She scoffs. Rolling her eyes, she nods reluctantly, then looks him up and down with a sneer and leaves. Nigel sits alone with his elbows on the table. He rests his chin on his knitted hands. Night. A neon sign on the roof of a building reads, Pelican Bar. Wearing a colourful stripy t-shirt and a white bandage around his head, Curtis closes the bar's wooden double doors. Dreadlocked Cordell cleans up behind the bar. Curtis collects a tray of glasses and heads into the kitchen to wash up. Finn sneaks up behind him and puts the sword to his throat.
Believe in ghosts, Curtis?
You know what? You are some kind of stupid.
You sound like my wife. Buddy around?
You know, I can't hear you. You talking to my death ear.
Oh, sorry.
Finn changes ears. Curtis squirts him in the face with washing up liquid. Finn drops the sword and they tussle.
Curtis?
Finn wallops Curtis with a frying pan. Cordell strolls cautiously towards the kitchen doors and peers through a window. A door opens, flattening him. Finn springs forward and puts the sword to Cordell's throat.
Now, take me to see the bunny. Big Bunny ain't never going to find out you didn't drown the first time. Okay.
Finn puts his weight on the sword and Cordell struggles to lift it from his throat. They both clutch the blade.
When's the last time you had this thing sharpened?
1715.
Cordell kicks Finn off and draws a pistol.
Okay, one second. Look, 20 people saw me today. Everybody on Moe's boat. Now, if you guys take me to Big Bunny, it's gonna look a lot better than if he finds out I'm alive from someone else.
It ain't his decision no more.
Who in the hell are you?
A heavy-featured man, Cyrus, clobbers Finn with a cricket bat. He wakes up on the floor of a warehouse filled with kegs of Big Bunny rum.
Ow.
Ain't no fool like a gold fool. Ain't that right, Mr. Finnick?
Who's the new guy?
This here is Cyrus. He's my new, chief of staff. He's helping me to refocus, reform, and renew.
What do you need him for, huh? We handling it.
Big Bunny looks at Cyrus, who then shoots Cordell.
Why'd you do that?
Just a little restructuring.
See, you let this boy get past you not just once, but twice. So I hope you focus now.
Oh, extremely focused. Very motivated. My morale probably 20% higher than when I came in here.
Can I get a word in?
What? What do you want?
I want to buy some time.
Bunny holds the sword.
Still breathing, ain't you?
Finn's nose is bloodied.
Yeah, thank you. Now hear me out. The way I see it, you bet on Mo, you got a 50-50 chance. But you bet on the both of us, and we cover twice the ground in only half the time. And I'm willing to give you 10% of everything I find. Plus what I already owe you, of course.
How much you say?
10% across the board.
10%, huh? Wow.
Cyrus loads the gun.
Say it again?
Come on, Wally. Now, 12% is cool.
I couldn't even hear you. What'd you say?
15%, but I gotta find
it. I'm sorry, how much?
18, but I owe other people.
That don't sound
money,
right.
All right?
This don't sound right.
20%, man, but that's it. Fine. Damn it! What? How much do you want?
I tell you what.
Finn has his hands up. Bunny wipes his mouth and steps forward.
You find a treasure and I won't kill you.
Moonlight plays on the dark ocean as Finn surfaces wearing his scuba gear. Clinging to the side of the precious gem, he removes his mouthpiece and face mask and catches his breath. He stands on the deck and strips naked.
How much do you owe?
He slips over.
Jesus, Tess.
She sits on stairs.
How much do you owe him?
He covers his crotch with a towel and stands.
Oh, who? Oh, who what?
Big Bunny.
I don't owe him any money.
Finn, how much do you owe him? Just tell me, so I'll know.
My God, Tess, I mean, that's so hard to be specific about. It's a really complex payment schedule.
How much?
$62,581.43.
Tess covers her mouth.
But we're good now.
Is there a reason you didn't tell me this before?
Yeah.
He stares at her.
You wouldn't have come.
Tess looks up pensively.
Yeah, I would. Want to come with you.
He looks away and takes a deep breath, then returns her gaze.
Are we finished?
Tess bites her bottom lip and nods gravely.
We sure are.
She stands up. Tight-lipped, Finn watches her go. Day. Tess wears a wetsuit and diving gear. She puts on her face mask. Finn checks Gemma's scuba gear.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nigel spots Finn's nose.
What happened to your face?
Somebody hit me with a cricket bat.
Oh.
Good idea. Now, this is a new type of regulation.
Shove it up your ass.
All right, we're good to go.
Ready, darling?
I'm dead.
Alphonse smirks.
It's just like the old days, huh?
They dive into the sea. A large turtle swims with them. Finn sweeps a metal detector along the seabed. A needle on a gauge on the metal detector climbs. Finn retrieves an empty beer can from the sand, then a frying pan and an oxygen valve. The sun sets. Wearing a pale blue shirt, Finn stares forlornly out to sea. Tess sits on the yacht's low stern with her feet dangling in the water.
Darling.
Gemma joins Nigel.
Drink.
Gemma raises a glass.
I have one.
She leaves the room. Nigel looks sad. Day, a charge is detonated in the sea. A jet of white sea foam rises like a geyser from the blue ocean. Wearing a black trilby over his bandage, Curtis scrambles up onto rocks and looks out to sea through binoculars. Mo finds a set of keys on the ocean floor. Two of his divers put the bits and bobs they've found into a metal tray on a chain to be winched up to the boat. On board their boats, the competing factions look to the skies as a banana and cream Cessna 206 seaplane soars overhead. Big Bunny looks down from the cockpit. Brooding clouds cast the boats in shadows as torrential rain buckets down in the darkened bay. Night. In the busy Pelican Bar, a dreadlocked barman pours shots of white rum. Alphonse, Nigel, Tess, Gemma and Finn sit glumly around a table. Slouched in his chair, Finn broods and sips his drink. Tess sits opposite him, glaring.
You know what else is really bugging me?
No. Please tell us, because I may personally drop dead in disappointment if I don't find out the 700 million thing about life on planet Earth that is bugging you.
Well, this is fun.
No, listen. If I am the Dutch frigate stuck on a reef, in a dead calm in the same cove Aurelia sank 3 years earlier, in less than 30 feet of the clearest water in the world.
Then how come I can't see her?
Finn's eyes are downcast. He raises his eyebrows.
Because she isn't there.
Tess covers her mouth.
I don't know.
No. Sebastian said that's where she went under.
And he said it.
Yeah.
Dear children, your entire theory is predicated on the proposition that Sebastian lied about everything he could to prevent the ship being found. So why on earth would he tell the truth about where she sank? I mean, it seems to me that the Aurelia can't be in the cove. The simple reason that that's where Sebastian said she was.
Tess closes her eyes resignedly. Tired-eyed, Finn shakes his head and furrows his brow. Nigel's uniformed sea captain, Stefan, enters the bar and pushes his way through the bustling crowd to their table.
Sorry to disturb, sir. We've had to move around to the lee side of the island on account of the storm.
She won't fit in the marina.
Afraid not. Taxi will take you to the beach on the north end. Give us a call and we'll pick you up in the launch.
Better safe than sorry.
Stefan leaves.
I've grown rather fond of not sinking.
Oh, don't even say that.
Well, it would be a shame to lose the art collection.
Or Gemma's shoes.
Especially because we're so close to shore, you know?
Finn's eyes rove in thought. He smiles.
Oh, my God.
What?
Oh, my God, of course.
Of course what?
Finn stands and looks at Gemma.
You are a genius.
He runs out.
Why did you pick the North Beach?
I didn't. It's the only beach on the island not blocked by the reef.
Yes. Yes! He ran her aground.
What are you so happy about?
He ran her aground!
What?
to save the dowry. Sebastian ran the whole goddamn thing aground.
On the yacht.
Bet you $1,000 I find something between here and that beach.
You don't have $1,000.
Fine, make it 10.
You don't have $10.
Fine, make it $1,000,000.
Finn takes his scuba gear from the hold. Tess looks thoughtful, then grabs an oxygen tank.
What are you doing?
I think I'm letting you go out there alone. You're crazy.
What, you don't trust me?
Why on earth would I trust you?
She glares at him.
Huh.
He proffers a metal detector. Wearing their gear, Finn and Tess scour the ocean floor with flashlights. Bubbles rise from their breathing apparatus as they sweep the seabed with metal detectors. Tessa's metal detector bleeps with increasing speed as she kicks her flippered feet. She stops and sweeps a thin layer of stones and sand away from the seabed. Holding the flashlight in one hand, Tess uncovers a portion of a cannon with the word Aurelia engraved on it. She looks over her shoulder excitedly. Finn swims through the darkened ocean, shining his torch over the sea floor. He puts his metal detector down as he finds a half-buried cannon. He examines it by the light of his torch. He inspects its engraved and embossed surface. Tess kicks off the ocean bed and swims away. They both surface yards from the yacht in the inky black ocean.
Oh, I did it!
You did what?
You mean
there's two?
There's two cars! Then I owe you $1,000,000.
Oh.
She dunks him in the water.
We got the Aurelia, baby!
Listen to me. If anybody finds out about this outside of our crew, we're screwed.
Wow. Let's just enjoy this for a second.
Oh, I'm enjoying it.
Finn dunks her head under the water. She wipes her eyes.
Oh, God! Thank God!
She floats on her back in the moonlight. Day. The precious gem is anchored in calm waters by the coast. Tess sits on the golden sands bathed in tropical sunlight. A large collection of salvaged objects, tools and implements are laid out in front of her. She inspects a glass bottle. Finn strolls along the beach with a metal detector.
Well, there's not much here. Now, they probably burned the ship and took everything inland.
Look! A pistol!
Cool! All right, well, what do we know about Topsail Key? We got the town, the church.
It's Preacher's Cave.
We were up there once, remember? It said something about first settlers, religious freedom.
Scott, I think that is just so important.
Yeah, but that was like 1780-something. I mean, Sebastian beat them here by almost 70 years.
But if there are any old records, they're in the church. Letters, journals, sermons.
Yeah.
Finn smiles.
That's smart, Tess. It's the oldest building on the island.
He nods pensively and Tess smiles. She wears a skimpy black bikini. Silver-haired Cyrus watches them through binoculars. They head back to the yacht on a speedboat.
Mo finds out we're gone, he's gonna come barreling up our ass like a freight train.
Oh my, that ought to be interesting.
I'm just saying we don't have much time.
Oh my God! Oh, back the boat! I just figured it out. It's been right in front of us this whole time!
What?
Precious gem!
Gemma beams.
Yes?
Well, do you realize how incredibly similar the word gem is to Gemma?
I thought I did.
My God. Daddy, you named the boat after me and didn't even know it.
Nigel gulps.
I didn't.
Don't you see?
Gemma sits down beside Nigel.
You were running away to sea, only you wanted to bring me along. So you unconsciously named the boat after me.
Finn smirks.
That is so beautiful.
She wraps her arms around her father. Tess gestures for Nigel to hug Gemma back, and he does.
Of course I named it for you, Gemma.
He looks her in the eyes.
But it wasn't unconscious. I gave it a lot of thought.
No. You did it unconsciously.
Nigel shrugs his eyebrows.
And then I did it unconsciously.
Nigel and pretty young Gemma smile at each other. Tess perches on a scooter behind Finn. They emerge over the brow of a grassy hill and motor down a dirt track towards a quaint stone church surrounded by swaying palm trees. A priest in a sun hat puts down a garden strimmer as they pull up.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. May I help you?
I hope so. I'm Finnegan. Tess?
Yes.
Finn and Tess sit in a shadowy basement room poring over dusty books. Finn blows the dust from one and wipes it with his hand. He glances forlornly at Tess, who's reading a book.
Don't even think about it.
What?
Don't what me, you know what.
It's weird, right?
She turns a page.
What?
This. All this together.
It's complex, but not in a good way.
She blinks and squints at the book. Finn looks at the floor.
Well, can I just say, I really wish we were still married.
Tess closes her eyes. She sighs heavily, then furrows her brow.
No.
Finn nods gravely. Night. Finn and Tess are still poring over books in the church basement.
Oh my God, listen to this. Listen. That we are by no means the first Europeans to visit here is finally proven by the discovery of a Spanish gravestone, that of a woman. I cannot but wonder who she was and how she came to die here, for the headstone reads simply, Aurelia, 1715.
Oh, shit.
Forsake her, I could not. And so it was here on this beautiful hilltop that I resolved to bury our own dead and begin work building a church.
He marked it with a headstone.
And this guy built a church around it.
It's in the cemetery.
Beaming, Tess slams the book shut and leaps into Finn's arms, planting a passionate kiss on his lips. With her legs wrapped around Finn's waist, he staggers as they kiss, banging her head on a light shade. He lays her down clumsily with him on top. They're obscured by stacked wooden chairs. Finn uses the headlamp of the scooter to examine a gravestone. Tess squats by a grave nearby.
Anything?
It's not here.
I refuse to believe that.
Well, it's because you refuse to believe something doesn't make it true. Or false. Or whatever the hell I'm saying.
Something wrong, Tess?
Something wrong? Why would anything be wrong? We just had sex in a church, and we're not even married, and now we're gonna dig up a grave. I mean, what is that, like a triple sin? I can't believe we haven't been struck by lightning.
Oh. She trips.
Ow!
Oh, shit. You okay?
Stupid rock. It's the second time I've done that.
Rock it. We can't have that. Come here. You rock. Stupid rock.
Finn strains to lift it.
Ow.
Tess watches with a smile.
Wake up!
Oh, honey, it's heavy.
She runs her fingers over the rock.
So is this.
The word Aurelia is etched into the underside of the rock. Cradling it, Finn looks at Tess and grins. Finn stands shoulder deep in a hole he's dug. He pauses, his yellow t-shirt streaked with mud. Tess sits astride the scooter and watches as Finn digs by the light of the headlamp. Finn looks up sharply at Tess, then slings the shovel aside and digs with his bare hands.
Finn. What if it's a body?
He exhumes a small barrel and regards it.
I thought he was a midget. With very cheap relatives.
He grabs his shovel.
What if it's a head?
Do you mind?
He raises the shovel and bashes a hole in the top of the barrel. Tess anxiously covers her face. Finn discards the shovel and empties the contents of the barrel onto the grass. He lays out an assortment of metal instruments. More items tumble out. Tess climbs off the scooter and stoops to inspect them. Finn throws the barrel aside and picks up a large leather book bound with string. Tess opens a cloth parcel to reveal a small hourglass, a beaded necklace with a cross on it, a pocket watch and other trinkets. Finn opens the book to reveal yellowed handwritten pages. Tess smiles.
Oh my god.
Staring at the book, Finn flashes a wide smile.
It is.
To my everlasting relief, and after a year's toil in this lonely place, have I finally stumbled upon a suitable place for my cargo, fortified by nature against the encroachments, accidental or deliberate, even of those who would force our tongues to betray its trust. The low December tide showed us the only way in and the only way out. But from January to November, the beached whale's spout is both ingress or egress. Thus is the vault rendered, made virtually impenetrable.
The beached whale spout. Are you sure?
La sobradura de la ballena varada.
Finn looks thoughtful. A smile plays on his lips.
It's a blowhole.
Tessa's eyes widen.
It's the one at Clifton Point.
The low December tide.
The winter solstice.
Drops so low.
The lowest tide of the year. Exposes the mouth of the blowhole, which is normally under 15 to 20 feet of water.
2 days out of the year to cave. They float the chests in, the tide returns, and the place becomes a death trap.
We just find our treasure.
They gaze at each other.
Sound like it.
It's Bunny, Cyrus, and Curtis.
Nice to meet you, Miss Finnegan.
Oh, hey, Bunny. What the hell are you doing here?
Ah. Give me the book.
Come on, Bunny. I mean, so you sure you don't want to, you know, give it to the new guy?
He flings the book at Cyrus, whose gun goes off. Finn dives on him and they wrestle. Tess grabs the shovel.
What do you think you're going to do with that, huh?
She swings for Bunny, but he ducks. She swings again, and he tumbles into the hole. She goes for Curtis.
Hey, look, you know, I don't want no trouble.
Get me out the hole!
Finn wrestles with Cyrus. Tess lunges with the shovel. She misses. Curtis grabs her. Finn wrestles Cyrus for the gun, shooting out the scooter's headlamp. Tess clobbers Curtis with the shovel. Finn thumps Cyrus and springs to his feet. He starts the scooter. Tess knocks the gun from Cyrus's hand.
Come on!
He wheel spins dirt into Curtis's face. Tess leaps on the back. She hits Bunny in the crotch with the shovel as they whiz past. They motor through palm trees.
Hang on!
Cyrus and Curtis pursue them.
Are you shot?
What?
You!
No! Are you shot?
No!
Not yet! We got the book! Wait, Cyrus! Finn!
I got the book! Stop!
What?
A branch knocks Tess off.
Finn!
Uh-oh!
He drives off a cliff.
Finn! No!
The scooter explodes. Cyrus drags Tess to her feet. Finn surfaces in the water. The scooter burns on nearby rocks. Curtis follows as Cyrus drags Tess by her hair. Bunny sits on a gravestone outside the church. Loose pages of the book are scattered by a light breeze. Bunny rises as Curtis and Cyrus show up with Tess.
Now, you sure he's really dead? Because I've been disappointed a lot of times before.
I should have aimed at your head, you little son of a bitch.
I'm gonna tell you what. I'm gonna have my boy submit your theory to a little academic review while I go sit my balls on some ice.
Unscathed, Finn runs through trees. He stops by a dilapidated cabin, looks left and right, and sprints off down a dirt track. Waves splash against the rocky coastline of Clifton Point. Cyrus stands by the water's edge. Curtis and Tess stand beside a wide hole in the rocky ground behind him. Curtis hands Tess a torch.
After this wave, you've got about 50 seconds.
She clubs Curtis with the torch.
You just get in the hole?
A torrent of white seafoam shoots up out of the blowhole, showering them. Tess is on her knees. Curtis puts a pistol to her head.
I can't!
Curtis.
Get in the hole.
Damn, Cyrus! Why are you always in my business, huh? I'm handling this shit.
Tess has a rope tied around her waist. Gripping the other end, Cyrus lowers her into the hole.
You know what? You run. You run.
Her feet find purchase on either side of the shaft, and she descends slowly and carefully into the darkness. She stands waist deep in the water at the bottom of the hole. Groaning, she rubs her ribs where the tight rope squeezes her. She shines the torch around. Crabs scuttle on the rocks.
It's not here!
Check underwater!
Cyrus throws her a face mask.
There's nothing but rock!
I'm just supposed to believe you, am I?
You want a second opinion? Come on down! Get me out of here!
Pull her up, man!
Curtis spreads his arms. Cyrus gathers the rope.
Hey! Say hi to your husband.
He tosses it down the hole.
What the hell are you doing, man?
Tess panics as the water begins to rise. Curtis gets down on his belly and shouts into the hole.
Throw me the rope!
Tess puts the mask on and, holding her breath, dives down through a gap in the rock. Cyrus kicks Curtis in the ribs. Curtis springs to his feet. They draw their pistols and face off. Her torchlight cuts through the water as she swims down into a submerged chamber with the rope wrapped around her right arm. Her eyes widen as she comes across the hidden treasure. Fast-moving water jets towards her through two tunnels in the rocky chamber. She frantically ties the rope to a cannon. On dry land, Curtis and Cyrus glare at each other as they continue their standoff. Tess clings to a treasure chest and braces herself for the oncoming torrent. The water rushes past her and she's wrenched backwards, still clinging to the taut rope and the chest. The chest is pulled from her grasp. Smashing into a rock, it spills gold coins into the rushing waters. Tess spins on the end of the taut rope. The wave bursts up through the blowhole, showering Curtis and Cyrus. Gold coins rain down on the rocks. Their guns still trained on each other, Cyrus and Curtis glance at the coins. Tessa's shoe and the torch have also been spewed out. They put their guns away. Curtis picks up a coin and holds it up.
That's what I'm talking about.
Tess surfaces beside the chest in the bottom of the deep blowhole. Cyrus speaks into his mobile.
Talk to me.
It's here. Bring the tanks. We're gonna have to go in through the ocean.
And the girl?
Tess hides from view.
She won't need one.
Curtis grins at Cyrus, who hangs up. Tess stands stiffly with her back to the rocky wall of the hole. Finn sprints to a payphone outside a grocery store by a jetty. Mo lies face down in bed on his boat. He has a tattoo of a ship on his back. He reaches clumsily for his phone.
This better be good.
Mo, it's Finn. It's bad. It's real bad. They got Tess.
What?
The treasure's in the blowhole at Clifton Point. They took her hostage.
The Cessna seaplane floats on the sea just off the craggy coast at Clifton Point. Tess surfaces in the blowhole and splutters for air. Wearing diving gear, Curtis and Cyrus perch on the skis of the seaplane. Big Bunny holds up an emerald the size of his fist.
Is one big-ass, sensible-sized emerald.
Aboard the precious gem...
Sure, go have fun. Go get yourselves killed. Go pump some lead in your fellow man. Go ahead.
What a sissy. Hey, he is more man than you'll ever be, honey.
Hey, you ladies want to move out? They could have killed a whole graduation class by now.
Daddy.
Nigel turns.
I'm scared.
She's going to be all right. I promise.
I'm worried about you.
I'll bless you for that. See you at breakfast.
He cups her cheek and smiles softly at her, then heads off. Tess takes a deep breath and dives down into the chamber beneath the blowhole. Daylight glimmers into the dark chamber from the two tunnels that lead to the ocean. Tess swims to the cannon and clings to it as the waves rush into the chamber and shoot like a geyser from the blowhole in the rocks above. Curtis and Cyrus flounder in the water as they're swept into the chamber through one of the tunnels. Tess sees them and retreats towards the blowhole, still attached to the rope. She emerges and gasps for air. Big Bunny looks up to see Finn approaching on dry land. Finn runs towards the blowhole.
God dang! How many times I'm gonna have to kill this boy?
Bunny draws his pistol and shoots at Finn from the floating plane. Bullets ricochet off the rocks. Tess looks up. Finn dodges another bullet as he approaches. The waters rise in the bottom of the blowhole.
Oh, shit!
In the chamber, Cyrus grabs the rope attached to Tess. Finn stares down at her. Cyrus pulls the rope. Tess gets dragged under. Finn grabs the torch and holds it to his chest, facing downwards. Bullets glance off the rocks around him as he drops down into the narrow jaws of the deep hole.
Shit!
Tess wrestles underwater with Cyrus. Finn enters the chamber with the torch. His vision is blurry as he has no face mask. He heads for Cyrus. Cyrus pins Tess against a rock and unsheathes a knife from his boot. He raises it above his head to strike, but Finn grabs his arm and gets him in a chokehold. The knife falls to the sea floor. Still holding her breath, Tess jabs the knife into Cyrus's leg. Finn rips the breathing apparatus from Cyrus's mouth and Tess inhales. Curtis emerges with a treasure chest.
There's a whole lot more where this came from!
He set it down on the ski of the plane. More waves rush into the chamber. Cyrus looks worried. Finn and Tess cling to the rope. The waves rush in through the tunnels, sweeping Cyrus backwards towards the blowhole.
Where's Cyrus?
He said he'd be right up.
A torrent of blood-red spume shoots up from the blowhole. A flipper lands on the rocks. Bunny retches, and Curtis grimaces. Bunny grabs a harpoon from the plane and hands it to Curtis.
Find out who that was. You heard me.
Finn lets go of the taut rope and takes a breath from the oxygen tank. With the breathing apparatus strapped to her back, Tess heads towards the tunnels. Finn follows her. She hands him the mask and he puts it on. He tips it back to clear the lenses, then stares over at the mountain of treasure on the ocean bed. He takes a breath of oxygen, then grins broadly and shares a gleeful look with Tess. Perched on the ski of the seaplane, Bunny uses a small fire extinguisher to bash open a lock on the chest. He opens it. It's filled with exquisite jewelry and pearl necklaces. He lifts a handful.
Oh!
Tess and Finn swim along the floor of the chamber. Curtis heads for the chamber. In the bright daylight, Nigel's speedboat tears through the water. Moe's armed with a rifle. Alphonse, Nigel, Eddie and Gary are aboard too. Bunny looks up from the treasure to see them approaching. Bunny fires a shot at them. They duck.
Oh my God.
Moe fires back.
Cover me.
Where are you going? Where's he going? Where are you going?
Shit, man!
Bunny shoots the windscreen of the speedboat as Moe dives into the water. He swims down towards Curtis, who turns and shoots him through the thigh with the harpoon. Blood leaks from burly Moe's leg as he drags Curtis towards him using the harpoon rope. Curtis lets go and turns to escape, but Finn cloppers him in the face. Tess swims up beside Moe and holds the oxygen mask to his mouth. Curtis hits Finn with a lump of coral.
Cock it! Cock it!
Alphonse struggles with the rifle.
The kid's making cock!
Bunny puts his pistol away and lifts the heavy treasure chest by its two handles. One of the rusty handles breaks, and the chest falls into the sea, spilling its contents as it sinks. The treasure rains down on Curtis and Finn as they wrestle on the ocean floor. The chest hits Curtis on the head.
Give that to me!
Nigel cocks the rifle and aims it at Bunny. Tess and Moe surface.
You okay, Moe?
Yeah, right.
They're right by the seaplane. Bunny drags Tess up by her breathing apparatus.
No!
Get your hands off her!
Bunny kicks Moe in the face. Finn takes a breath from Curtis's mouthpiece.
Get in the plane!
Bunny forces Tess in ahead of him, into the front seat. Tess grabs the chunky emerald and conceals it as he loads his pistol. He starts the engine. Finn looks up. In the seaplane.
Sit back!
Tess smashes him with the emerald.
Sit back, Bill! Sit back, Bill!
He punches her.
Sit!
She's out cold. Bunny presses a hand to his bloodied brow, then plunges the throttle. A needle on the dash climbs as the propellers accelerate and the seaplane motors along the surface of the water. Finn gives chase, his powerful front crawl failing to keep up with the fleeing plane. Gemma and Gary approach on jet skis. Gemma passes the speedboat.
Come on! Go!
She speeds over to Finn, who climbs up behind her on the jet ski.
Get me on that plane!
Now, you big butch bastard!
Just go help him out! Go help him!
Gary tears off.
I want you to pull me right up next to the port side!
What's the port side?
The left side!
Oh, okay!
Right next to her!
Bunny glances over his shoulder. The jet ski carves through the water behind the floating seaplane. As they round it, Bunny plunges the throttle again. The plane speeds up. The jet ski hares after it in its wake.
Go, 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 go! Stay with it!
They keep pace on its left-hand side.
What are you doing?
Pull right up next to the pontoon!
Gemma skids the jet ski up alongside the plane. They nearly crash into it as they bounce along the surface of the water. Finn dives onto the plane's left ski and grabs hold of a metal strut that connects it to the underbelly. He clings on for dear life as Gemma flies off the speeding jet ski. The plane takes off. It soars into the air, narrowly avoiding Gary and the speedboat. Mo gapes as the plane heads skywards.
Now that's a man who loves his wife!
Finn lies flat along the back of the ski. Bunny looks down at him through the window and mouths obscenities.
That's it.
He opens the plane door and aims his pistol at Finn. He shoots, hitting the ski. Tess wakes and kicks Bunny out of the open door. His legs flail as he plummets towards the ocean. He fires, hitting the underside of the plane. Fuel leaks from the bullet hole. Tess grabs the controls and guides the plane down towards the sea. She pulls the plane back up again. Finn drags himself upright and pulls himself through the open door into the pilot's seat.
Great job! You're still in the air, right?
Technically!
Oh, shit! I think he hit the engine!
The plane drops.
Wings! Flaps! Airspeed, altitude! Pedals! For the rudder! Check!
How do you know what to do?
You know, PlayStation!
Tess rolls her eyes.
Hang on, here we go.
Yeah! The plane banks left.
Oh, now you're doing it!
Whoa!
Way to go! That's great! Wow! We're flying!
Yep!
How do we land?
Yep!
How'd you do it in the game?
Curtis bobs up out of the water with his hands full of treasure. He turns slowly with his hands raised to see Mo aboard the speedboat, looming over him with the rifle. He lets the coins and jewelry fall from his grasp.
Now, honey, this next part, I'm not exactly sure how to pull off. I do know that we've got to completely stall out just before we hit the water.
Stall?
Stop flying.
Stop flying?
Yeah, and land. Nice soft water.
Are we gonna die?
No. No, we're not.
Tess smiles confidently. The others watch from the boat.
Oh, shit. Where's Finn?
Probably is flying the plane.
You mean there's hope?
Not necessarily.
The plane splutters as it descends.
Hey, let me just say this.
No.
I'm
Why not?
Curtis, tell me after we crash.
She pants wearily.
Now give me something to look forward to.
She smiles and they gaze at each other. Tess kisses Finn softly and cups his cheek as the plane makes a wobbly descent. She pulls away and for a fleeting moment, Finn gazes at her longingly. They separate and turn their attention to the controls. Tess takes deep breaths as Finn lowers the plane towards the sea. He checks their altitude.
100.
The plane shakes.
We got it, baby. 80. 60.
Finn braces in his seat.
40.
He works the foot pedals.
Put it up, boy!
Baby. I love you.
Put it up!
Finn pulls back on the controls, lifting the nose of the plane upwards as the skis graze the water. The plane touches down, then skids sideways across the surface of the water. They scream as the plane flips forward, submerging the nose and hurling them into the controls. A wing shatters. Large panels float in the clear ocean as the plane sinks. The others watch from the boat as the rudder disappears beneath the surface. Tess pops up unscathed.
Finn?
She casts about desperately. Finn emerges.
I'm sorry. I love you. I learned a lot from my mistakes. Marry me.
No! You haven't. Yes!
A wave splashes them as they kiss. They bob up and down in the water, kissing passionately. A pregnant Tess cuts a purple ribbon outside Moe's pillared museum. Finn raises a hand victoriously and kisses her. They're flanked by Gary, Eddie, Moe, Nigel, Gemma, and Alphonse. Photographers snap pictures from the front of a cheering crowd. Patrons gather around glass display cases to stare in awe at the exquisite artifacts. Gold goblets, an emerald-encrusted cross, a pearl necklace, an ornate gold crown. On the walls are pictures of Moe and Alphonse posing with the salvaged dowry. Finn and Moe hug each other. Alphonse gives Gemma a loving squeeze. A large picture on the wall shows them all together aboard a boat littered with treasure. Eddie kisses Gary on the cheek. Finn salutes the crowd. Figurative gold statuettes and a multitude of gold ingots are lined up in a large display case, marvelled at by families of visitors. In a case apart from these glittering treasures is the stone from the churchyard, with the word Aurelia engraved across it. ITFC audio description, written and read by Sam Clark. Directed by Andy Tennant. Produced by Bernie Goldman, John Klein. Produced by Donald DeLine. Director of Photography, Don Burgess, ASC.